everyone, Shirley here. If you are serious about growing your company in the federal sector, you'll be faced with having to negotiate with people in the contracting office. Whether your contract award is a non-competitive direct award under a socioeconomic certification, a contract awarded after a bidding competition, the exercise of an option year, or a contract plus-up, there are many circumstances under which specific details of the contract need to be ironed out. Not everything can be included in a proposal. The proposal is a starting place, but usually additional terms, conditions, deliverables, timing, and financial details, to name a few, need to be discussed and agreed to before the final contract is signed. Many small government contractors are surprised by and therefore unprepared for these negotiations. They don't understand what can be negotiated or how to negotiate the final award. Many get the notification that they've been selected for award and celebrate and think that that's the end of the process, but it's just the beginning. My special guest today to help me discuss this important topic is Lene Light, CPA, principal, and the GovCon team leader at Witham, with offices in the greater D.C. area. Welcome, Lene.
Thank you, Shirley. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you, Lene. Please tell our audience a little about yourself and Witham.
Sure. I've mentioned my name is Lene Light. I am a CPA and MBA. I have 20 years of experience in the accounting field. My career focus has been in internal audit and controls, compliance for government contracting, SEC financial reporting, and cost accounting. I've supported contractors in implementing compliant DFARS business systems and worked across a variety of industries. At Witham, I lead our government contractors team. Witham is a forward-thinking, technology-driven advisory and top 20 accounting firm. We help clients be in a position of strength in today's complex business environment. Our government contractors team supports companies with federal awards throughout the contract life cycle, from proposal to delivery. For example, in the proposal phase, we provide strategic pricing support. During the contract execution phase, we provide compliant outsourced accounting solutions and incurred cost submissions. During the end of this contract, we also support contract closeout, and we also provide traditional CPA services, such as financial statement audits, reviews, compilations, and tax planning and preparation. At Witham, we are not just an accounting firm. We also provide advisory services such as digital solutions, technology, ESG, and cybersecurity. I encourage the audience to check out what Witham has to offer and experience the Witham way by visiting our website at witham.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Lene. Warranted contracting officers are responsible for signing and executing contracts. However, there may be others inside and outside of the contracting office who may be involved in negotiations depending upon the type and scope of the contract. So the question for you is, with whom should small government contractors expect to interact?
There are many individuals that are involved in the contract lifecycle. During contract negotiation phase, the contractor may interact with the contracting officer. The contracting officer essentially is responsible for managing the solicitation, evaluating, and awarding the contract. They may also interact with the contracting specialist. The contracting specialist is typically the person that's going to draft and revise any contract language, assist in market research and proposal analysis. Also, there's the contracting officer's technical representative, and then there's also price and cost analyst. The price and cost analysts are the individuals who are ensuring the pricing is fair and reasonable, and you may interact with those individuals if they have questions on your cost structure. Also, legal counsel and other agency representatives may get involved, as well as the key point of contact for the initiative.
You know, Lene, I saw a graphic that was published by Contract Management Magazine that shows that as many as 120 people among the contractor and agency staff that touch a typical $1 million contract. So many small government contractors are surprised at what can be negotiated during the proposal and bidding process. It's not just price. It can be deliverables, key personnel, management approaches, timeframes, and incentives, for example. This will sometimes occur as the agency is trying to narrow the field. They may down-select to the top two or three vendors and then ask those vendors for revised proposals that further clarify their approach. Have you seen this in your experience, Lene?
Yes, I have seen this. You know, the contractor may be asked to expand upon their technical or clarify information that may be vague in their proposal. The contractor also may be asked to submit additional data to substantiate their indirect rates or disclose the fee that is included in their price.
And some companies are under the false assumption that government contracts are take it or leave it, that negotiations are not allowed, or that they will insult the contracting office employees. In fact, FAR Part 15, as well as other parts of the FAR, allow the contracting officer to use their judgment to reach fair and reasonable negotiated prices and other terms and conditions. In essence, contracting office personnel are negotiating on behalf of the government every day. How can small contractors level that playing field?
Understanding the types of contracts that are negotiable and which terms and conditions within the contract are negotiable. For example, FAR regulation is not negotiable. We can't change the language of the regulation. However, the applicability of the regulation can be questioned. Understanding the order of precedence within the contract is important. When negotiating terms and conditions, you want to understand the order of precedence to ensure that the terms are documented in the correct sections to be fully enforceable. Prior to entering negotiations, define your key success factors to yield optimal performance results. Identify the terms and conditions where you are flexible. Identify the terms and conditions that would not affect your overall performance. The contractor should review their business systems and policies and procedures to evaluate if the contractor is prepared operationally to execute and comply with the contract terms. Understand the contract types, the requirements to be awarded the contract type, and the applicable FAR clauses that are required by the contract type. For example, an adequate or another term used, acceptable accounting system is required for any contract type other than firm fixed price, where the contractor has full responsibility for the performance, cost, and resulting profit or loss on the contract.
Let's explore this a little, Lene. What are the circumstances in which a contractor should negotiate a firm fixed price contract, and what are the circumstances in which a contractor may prefer a cost plus or level of effort contract?
The criteria for selecting contract type is prescribed in federal acquisition regulations. For example, if a contractor does not have an acceptable accounting system, no other than a firm fixed price contract can be issued. Additionally, whether or not there are enough market participation and whether prices are set by a competitive market also determines the type of contract that can be issued. Understanding that fixed price versus firm fixed price is important. There are different types of fixed price contracts, for example, fixed price incentive fee. Fixed price incentive fee is similar to a flexibly priced cost reimbursable contract. The contract risk shifts between the contractor and the government, depending on the contract type, with cost type contracts posing the highest risk for the government and firm fixed price posing the highest risk to the contractor.
Excellent. Thank you for that explanation. We need to take a break. I'm talking to Lene Light, CPA principal and the GovCon team leader at Witham. When we come back, we'll talk about misunderstandings and mistakes that contractors make. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Shirley Colliger, president and founder of Scale to Market, is your host for this GrowthMasters Federal presentation. Scale to Market helps businesses think, plan, collaborate, and build market value by developing and executing customized data-driven business development playbooks, building efficient information systems, and creating high-performing BD teams. Utilizing the proprietary Davy Business Development Growth Framework, Scale to Market partners with business owners and executives to increase their company's value by achieving profitable and sustainable growth in the federal marketplace. Email Shirley at scollier@scaletomarket.com to learn more about the Davy Growth Framework and how it can be instrumental in helping grow your federal contracting business. Back now to Shirley's conversation with Lene Light as they discuss the keys to success when negotiating with the federal government.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about contract types. Let's now talk about misunderstandings. Because of the presumption by many small businesses that government contracts are non-negotiable, money is left on the table and risks are borne unevenly by small contractors. Lene, what are the biggest mistakes you have seen small businesses make?
Not reading the contract. It is important that you read the contract. Many small contractors just sign the contract without fully reading what they are signing. Does the contract align with the RFP and what was proposed? Do you fully understand and are you prepared to begin performing on the contract and complete the first billing cycle? The contract issued may be different than how the RFP was drafted. The contract type can change. There may be scope changes, or the requirements may be vague. There could be terms that are undefined, and there could be sections that are missing. The contracting officer and their team, they use technology and templates to create contracts. We all know that sometimes anomalies occur with technology. Also, the contracting officer and their team, they're human with a full workload. Oversights can be made. The contracting officer will appreciate you identifying errors if done in a respectful way. Also, contracting officers are more patient with and responsive to questions prior to the signing of the contract. Questions posed that could have been resolved prior to contract execution can cause performance disruptions, shift timelines, or result in contract modifications that could have been anticipated.
I agree with you, Lene. Contracting offices are understaffed and they have a lot of turnover. The federal government overall is struggling to fill open positions. Most of the errors are just mistakes. They're made because of templates, as you mentioned, that are used by contracting office staff, but those mistakes are then not caught by the contracting officer. The most glaring mistakes that I see are in contract clauses appended to the contract. Many times they contain almost the entire volume of FAR clauses, and this can be particularly harmful to small businesses, especially through flow downs from prime contractors. I have seen small businesses inadvertently give up their IP rights to the government because they didn't read and understand those FAR clauses attached to the contract or subcontract. Lene, we talked about what you should do, but what are some of the most successful but least known industry best negotiating practices?
Believe it or not, the contracting officer and their team are not the enemy. The contracting officer wants a successful outcome. The contracting officer wants the contractor to be able to meet the objective without the risk of disruption to the overall government initiative. Develop a relationship with your contracting officer. The government has selected you for your expertise. Demonstrate that expertise by ensuring that the key success factors are identified and defined in the contract and agreed upon. This ultimately will be what is factored in the contractor's CPAR. The contractor can receive the draft contract and track changes to make red lines, draft edits, and make comments. Again, when drafting contract language, the contractor should understand the uniform contract format and order of precedence.
I'm so glad you mentioned that the contracting office is not the enemy. I want to emphasize what you said about CPAR's ratings. One of the categories that vendors are evaluated on in the CPAR system is contract management, and that starts with the negotiating process well before the contract is signed. Lene, can you give us an example of a contract negotiation that went well?
Sure. I worked with a contractor that received a sole source 8A certified direct award, where the government's intent was to issue a T&M labor hour contract. However, during the negotiation phase, the contracting officer wanted pricing at a CLIN structure that modeled after a cost reimbursable contract, and the contract included FAR clauses that are applicable to cost reimbursable contracts. The contractor at the time was implementing a new accounting system that would be prepared for a post-award accounting system review, but the contractor felt that they were not ready to comply with the reporting requirements that is required with flexibly priced or cost-type contracts. We communicated to the contracting officer that the contractor did not have an acceptable accounting system, and therefore only a firm fixed price contract can be awarded. Through continued discussions, we were able to ascertain that the government only wanted to pay for level of effort expended on the contract. So we settled on a fixed price contract with level of effort billing. Additionally, we were able to negotiate pre-billed labor upon contract signing due to the amount of time we spent negotiating, and the contractor had to staff the contract and would have payroll obligations before they would be able to contractually bill on the contract. The government was understanding of the contractor's concerns as a small business. We worked collaboratively with the contracting officer to redline the contract, reference and incorporate the appropriate applicable FAR clauses, draft the language surrounding the billing requirements, and other contract language.
That is an excellent example, Lene. I have a small client, 15 people that had been doing business with an agency for about 5 years, excellent CPARS ratings. One day, the contracting office called and said that they are canceling the contract and hiring 7 of the small business's employees, almost half. As you can imagine, this was devastating news to the small business. The contracting office personnel said to the contractor, "You hire really good people," which was a sort of an insult. So you hire really good people and we're going to hire them away from you. The contracting office said that there would be a 3-month transition period, end of discussion. The agency is a fairly large agency with a huge budget. The small business is a woman-owned small business. So after a few days of crying and gnashing of teeth, we put together a plan to approach the contracting office about helping them to find replacement work for their small business in another area of the agency. The quality of work the small business had performed was well documented. So we did a little research and found some upcoming work that the small business could easily perform. It wasn't easy, but the final result was introductions to others within the agency and a $4.5 million direct award to this small business that made up for the other contract loss. New relationships were formed, and a whole lot of lessons were learned. So, Lene, I have 2 other topics to discuss before we wrap up today. The first is budgeting. And I mention this because to effectively negotiate prices with the government, you have to be adequately informed. What is your advice to small businesses regarding realistic budgeting?
Don't just budget for where you are now as an organization, but forecast for the growth of the organization and the structure that is needed to support the growth goals. Appropriately classified, budgeted, and forecasted costs, separating direct versus indirect costs, and segregating unallowable costs. The budget and forecast should be dynamic and scenario-based. Prepare multiple versions, baseline versus optimistic, good, best, better. Identify risk factors. What are the risk factors that are beyond the contractor's control? Supply chain disruptions, environmental factors. What are the risk factors that are within the contractor's control? Employee morale, cybersecurity framework, corporate governance, internal processing and lead time. what are the opportunities that the organization is tracking? Do the opportunities require investment in the infrastructure of the organization? For example, do you need more robust accounting system? Will the opportunities targeted require disclosure statements? What are investments that can be made to streamline processes, gain efficiencies, reduce the costs that the organization can control to yield maximum profitability? If you are reporting profits each year, holding excess cash over minimum reserves, and you have disjointed systems, you're not investing in infrastructure, and not investing in your employees, how long can you truly sustain profitability and deliver on your contracts?
That's a good question. And how does a budget that is focused on growth differ from one that is not?
A budget focused on growth includes reinvestment in the organization. It also identifies areas or opportunities that you may execute at risk because it allows entry into a new market, allows the capture of a customer that will provide additional opportunities, supports the development of new innovation, and does not compromise the overall sustainability of the organization.
Lene, I will end our discussion by saying that contract negotiations begin during the business development process. Business developers who are aware of what types of work and contract types, terms, and conditions are profitable for their companies can many times shape an agency's acquisition strategy. Most contracting officers are amenable to suggestions that help the agency fulfill its mission quickly, accurately, and cost-effectively. By recommending some risk reduction steps, such as demonstrations, pilot projects, and direct awards, agencies get to know you, your offerings, and solutions, and begin to trust you. And that is the best possible scenario for future negotiations. Lene, do you have anything to add?
Yes. I would like to wrap up by saying government contracting is not easy. There are many variables, and it takes time to build relationships. Contracts don't come overnight just because you decide, I want to do business with the federal government. It's a very competitive space. There are SBA programs that help with the barriers to entry and narrowing down the competitive field. But even with those programs, capturing a contract, sustaining that contract, and growing within the federal marketplace is not a guarantee. It's a team effort, and make sure you have the right team in place. Do the research and be honest about your capabilities so you know what you can take on in-house, when you need to leverage outsourced resources, and when you need teaming partners.
I could not have said it better, Lene. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge about contract negotiations with our audience today.
Thank you so much, Shirley. It was a pleasure being here.
Folks, if you would like to get in touch with Lene, she can be reached at llyte, that's LLYTE, at witham.com. Or you can reach out to us here at Scale to Market, and we'll make sure you're connected. This is Shirley Collier, president of Scale to Market and host of the Growth Masters Federal Podcast, signing off for now. As we close, I want to thank you for joining us today and encourage you to connect with me on LinkedIn and visit our website, that's scale2market.com with the number 2 in the middle, where you will find a link to our webcast, which now include open captioning for those seeking more clarity in the narrative, along with our podcast, white papers, my blog, and other links and resources. While there, please leave us a comment or suggestion so we can stay focused on what's important to you. We'll see you next time.